Welcome to this episode of Cable Stakes. My name is Ben Bekele. I'm the Director of Product Management in our Cable Access Business Unit. And I'm your guest host this week on cloud and security for cable. Joining me today is Don Doerr, who's our technical leader for the Cisco Cable Access Unit working on CMBR. Don, thanks for being here.
Thank you, Ben. Really appreciate the opportunity to talk to you and everyone else.
Today we'll be talking about a topic that's near and dear to most cable operators, virtualization and moving to cloud. And Don, one of the key things that we're hearing around in general is cloud virtualization versus cloud native. Can you give us some background in what the differences between virtualization slash cloud and cloud native is?
Sure. So typically when people refer to cloud applications, they're referring to an application that's hosted in a public or private cloud, which is an extensible infrastructure of compute power. And so that on-premise, that may be connected to something like an Amazon Outpost that is then networked through Amazon's cloud network. And so in that case, we're talking about running on that extensible network infrastructure. When we're talking about a cloud-native application, we're talking about an application that follows a set of principles and guidelines for how you design and implement an application that would tend to lend itself to running well on a cloud. So principles like allowing the applications to start and stop very readily, having a small footprint of pieces that can move around, being able to discover applications on the fly. Now, cloud native applications can run on premise equipment, on regular servers, as well as on the cloud. And so the distinction really is one is targeting where the application runs, which is cloud, and cloud native is how the application is built.
Excellent. And typically on the cloud native side, what are the advantages that you see versus cloud in terms of the application itself?
Well, I wouldn't really say that there's a advantage versus disadvantage of cloud native versus cloud because they're really complementary. But advantages of cloud native applications themselves are if you build it using those principles, then you tend to have microservices, for example, that have very small footprint that can fail and that can start back up very quickly. You tend to use container applications, and containers make it easy to deploy the application and also makes it easier for the developers to make updates to the application and deploy it. You're typically using principles like service discovery, usually using DevOps principles that makes it easy to support the product.
So we've heard about the feature velocity that is enabled as you move to a microservices-based architecture. And our solution specifically moving us to that is our cloud-native broadband router. What is CMBR and how is that different from the traditional CCAP cores, but also from what we traditionally have heard from others that are called virtual CMTSs?
Sure. Let me start off a little bit with what the traditional looks like, and then let me tell you what the real benefits of the CMBR itself are. So traditional CCAP cores are typically built within a embedded platform or a self-contained platform, and all of the data is being routed directly into that device over the layer 2 network directly, or even layer 1. So, for example, the RF is going from the modem into the fiber optic network, which is getting spliced directly into the CCAP core. So everything is directly connected. And one of the difficult things about that is that you need to make sure that the CCAP core is located at a place where it has physical access to the right connectivity to be able to connect directly into the node to the home. Like the whole networking industry, cable has started on a disaggregation path where we're separating the physical connectivity of the edge of the network from the actual processing of the control plane and in some cases the data plane. And that's kind of what we're doing with CMBR. Before I get there, one distinction between some virtual CMTSs versus CMBR is some vendors have taken their stack and really just ported it into a VM environment and then run it on VM in something like VMware or OpenStack. And you know there are some reasonable solutions that work in that environment, but there are some differences. you do have to deal with that, the weight of that that VM infrastructure, and it's not quite as nimble as the cloud native infrastructure that I'm going to tell you about that we're using in the CNBR. So the CNBR itself is a true cloud native application. We've built it on top of the subscriber management infrastructure, which is a packaging of a hardened operating system on top of Kubernetes with a set of open source services, as well as Cisco source services that help make it easy for technologies and products like ours to focus on the product. That is, we're building a DOCSIS product, so our engineers can focus on DOCSIS, whereas our infrastructure brethren are going to be focusing on making sure they have a hard and secured infrastructure. And the advantages of the product and the platform are that we make very small, lightweight microservices, built-in containers. We can move those workloads around either within the platform or we can see it extending out into the network as we go forward. So we've built a very lightweight, very decoupled microservices that we're looking to be able to extend its usefulness over time. Another thing that's really significantly important and different about what we've done with CNBR is it's really a top to bottom or bottom to top re-implementation of a CCAP core. No, we did not just take a code that we'd had sitting around from a previous product and just ported it. Instead, we took the expertise, the folks who have built those previous products, and had it re-implemented from the ground up using cloud native principles. Typically, just taking an application and just porting it doesn't give you all the benefits of a cloud native stack and platform. Older applications tend to build up a lot of memory. They tend to be very tightly coupled. And so in order to gain the advantages of the cloud native infrastructure, we built it from the ground up in the right technologies and the right programming languages so that it would plug into a cloud native and a cloud infrastructure seamlessly.
Excellent. Looking at the type of scale required, how are we achieving the scale of CNBR to match that of the traditional CCAP core?
Well, one of the real benefits that I could have mentioned earlier of a platform like this is that as opposed to running on an embedded platform, which embedded platforms are specialized platforms that are targeted towards applications, but because the customer set of such a platform is fairly small, those platforms iterate much more slowly over time. So what we've done is with our infrastructure, we can run on a COTS platform, although right now we're targeting Cisco's UCS servers for test purposes, but it could run any COTS platform such that you could take advantage of the scale and the velocity of the increases in memory, CPU, storage density on those platforms, which those are increasing on yearly, if not more frequently. And so our customers will be able to grow their footprint and density with those platforms. Now, today, we're getting a 3 or 4x in terms of density of the previous platform to the new platform, where we're running at a fourth of the power, a fourth of the space, and still able to achieve the same amount of traffic flow as well as the same number of modems. And that's going to go up in time, not only as we increase those platform densities, but also as we get better and better in tightening up our product and making it more scalable in itself.
Excellent. And it sounds to me as you cloudify and created these microservices to essentially replicate what the traditional CCAP core is doing and move to cloud native, there's going to be more complexity. How do you secure that infrastructure as you move to cloud, but also move in conjunction to cloud to this distributed remote file or other DAA architecture?
Yeah, it's quite right, Ben. This is a distributed platform. When you're in an enclosed package like an embedded platform, everything is internal, and the only thing you need to worry about is the connection going in and the connection going out. And so there is less exposure, what we call the vulnerability footprint. With an application like this, where they're networked and distributed, you need to make sure that all the connections between the devices is secured. Because we have more devices, we need to make sure every one of them, every server that's within the complex, is secure. also, as part of the product itself, we leverage a lot of open source products. For example, when we display the graphs that show the trends and analyses of what's going on in the system in our operations hub, which is our management, our DAA management platform, we use Grafana and we use Prometheus, which are some very common open source projects. Of course, we need to make sure that those as well are secure. And so any of the open source components that we use, we bring them in, we scan them, we make sure that there are no vulnerabilities that are built into them. And once they pass those scans, we host them within our own network and make sure that that's what we build into the product. We don't just pull new versions off the internet directly and build that into the product. We only build the ones in that we've ensured are secured. So those are some of the key areas that of concerns in terms of securing a cloud-native distributed application over the embedded platform.
Okay. So as you're moving to this architecture, as you stated, you're leveraging more open source components, which, again, for an operator thinking about this, is, you know, that's a red flag. So what are the things that Cisco is doing to ensure that our customers are successful as they move to this cloud and distributed architecture, both from a security standpoint, but as part of our ongoing effort to ensure that these systems are as reliable, if not more secure, than what they're traditionally used to?
Yeah, so let's start off with the Cisco side, and then let's talk a little bit about the customer side. So Cisco has a continuous security posture that we're currently working on. So it's continuous in two dimensions. First of all, in time. There are vulnerabilities that are found all the time, both in protocols as well as in libraries that are used, as well as in products that we may be integrated with. And because that these vulnerabilities are being found over time, we constantly have to be looking for those vulnerabilities. Cisco has this organization called pCert that collects the vulnerabilities as they occur and then notifies development teams of those vulnerabilities for the libraries that the development teams have registered as being used. So as opposed to only having the development teams scan the products, which we do, our pCert organization will also actively notify our organization when some vulnerability occurs in a library that we're using. In order to make that work, however, the development organization needs to register all those libraries. And so in order to ensure that the development organization does the right thing from a registration perspective, as well as licensing, Cisco has a secure development life cycle that's defined that every product must adhere to. One of the aspects of that is that the projects must be scanned and all of the libraries that are used are put into a large database that allows our pCert organization to notify us when issues are found. Another part of that life cycle is that all developers need to be trained on security to avoid some of the common security pitfalls. So two of the most common ones, for example, that our development team is warned about is, first, buffer overflow issues, where folks who are attacking the system may try to overflow a buffer and put executable code within, you know, within the system. The other one is that goes hand in hand with buffer overflows is input verification or validation, making sure that the input into the system is valid to avoid someone being able to inject a buffer overflow. So as I said, it's an end-to-end process. We verify that what's being delivered to the customer is correct by signing all of our images. The developers need to ensure that they're developing secure code at all times. We need to scan the products of the code that we built as well as the products that we integrate with. We need to make sure that all the ports that we're using from a network perspective, only the ones that are used are open and the ones that aren't being used are closed. And there's a very large set of requirements that Cisco enforces on the products before we can release them to the customer. So that's kind of what Cisco does. Now, on the customer side of things, of course, the customer needs to also ensure that they've secured the product. So in some cases, that may be physical security. In some cases, that may be having a good firewall methodologies and disciplines so that they only open those ports that they really expect to be used and close the ones that they aren't going to use. They need to make sure that they aren't adding new software to the platforms on which we're delivering our products that may have vulnerabilities built into them. So there are some practices that all of our customers should be following to ensure that their environment is secure and the products that Cisco delivers stay secure.
As Don stated, you know, our CMDR is built in on cloud-native technology. You know, we've taken the traditional CMTS and broken out into microservices, 3x the scale, and our subscriber microservices infrastructure essentially takes all the open source softwares that we use and really creates a secure packaging of those. So we ensure that you have a safe usage of those open source softwares. And in terms of process, our CSDL process, which is our Cisco Secure Development Lifecycle, ensures that the product we roll out is secure and validated. And our PCIRC organization will monitor any threats and go out and, as they find them, notify our customers and ensure that the fixes provided by Cisco. So as Don highlighted, we provide security from the time we built the solution and you consume it. So there's end-to-end security. Don, are there any parting words that you'd like to share?
Well, with respect to CMDR, of course, we're looking forward to folks adopting the product as they move forward into the DAA architecture world. And we think people will find it, much easier to use and install than some of the products that they may have installed in the past. So that's a kind of a key cornerstone that our team has put in place for the product. And then from a security perspective, as I said, our team takes security very, very seriously. In every single release that we submit, we make sure that we followed all the right processes and procedures. The organization is well trained at this point to avoid security pitfalls. And we're always looking for feedback from our customers in anything that we can do to improve the product, whether it's usability, whether it's functionality, or whether it's security.
All right. Thank you, Don. With that, this closes our latest episode of Table Stakes. And Don, thank you for being here. That was very informative and insightful.
Pleasure, Ben. Good talking to you as usual.